This is Tartarus of Rustibus, episode 139. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products. Whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it, I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
Sound the trumpets, sound the alarms. If we had a cheesy clap audience sound, I would put it right here. There are two real customers using Drip as of now. We got them online this week.
Too.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. It feels really good. I didn't realize what a milestone this would be, but getting them on it, using it, actually seeing the excitement as I did a video Skype earlier with one of them, and he was really excited. And he's a small company called Ambassador, getambassador.com. And they have 5 or 6 employees. And he was like, everyone in the office was just stirring because we haven't collected this many emails. And right away we were stoked about it. And it was this really good feeling. He's like, yeah, I really see the potential here and how easy it was to get set up. So it was a lot of positive. You kind of need that positive feedback to keep going. You write code in a basement for too long and it just feels like, is someone going to like this, even though you're getting all the good signals? So that felt great. The other customer number one was, it was Brennan Dunn with PlanScope. And he got it up right away and also, didn't run into any issues. So it feels good. We have three more scheduled to get on in the next probably 7 days. We'll see how that pans out. We're working through this early access list and then we still have quite a few features and they're coming in now that people are actually using the app. I'm excited to actually do the launch to the early bird list. I'd say it's a couple months out, to be honest, but we are making progress. It's not a stagnant couple months. It's a moving very quickly, trying to implement everything and improving the product the whole time, couple months.
I've discovered that I need to carve out some time to work on my Altiris training site to convert it from a subscription pricing model into a more of a static pricing model. But it's so low on the priority list right now, I just don't have time. So it's going to probably sit there for several months while it's just, kind of eking out some revenue, but not nearly as much as it could. The lifetime value is a lot lower for people than I'd like it to be. And I know that I could charge more on a static model because people are only sticking around for, maybe 2, 3, 4 months. I've had some people stick around for as long as 7 or 8, but I haven't really generated any new content. So basically they're paying a subscription fee for something that realistically they can get through most of the content in less than a month. And there's people who just stick around and keep paying it because, they don't want to yank out the credit card or whatever and, go through the cancellation process. But then there's other people who will get in, they'll use it for a couple of hours or a couple of days, and then they're done. They don't even need to pay for it at that point. So I've kind of stepped back and evaluated it a little bit and said, okay, well, if I convert this over and I just charge a flat rate of like $4.99 or, $7.99 or something like that, then I can just hand them the videos, they can keep them, and then I don't have to host them and do all these other things. And the lifetime value essentially increases at that point. But it's a matter of taking the time to do that. And right now, I just don't have the time.
Yeah, I think that's a really good move, actually. Give them a big zip file of everything. The other thing you could think about is to upload them to Udemy. It'll probably take you 1 to 2 hours to do that. The advantage there is Udemy has a lot of people looking for stuff. I don't know if they're searching for Altiris, but my video course on how to hire a VA for startups is on Udemy, and already I'm seeing a few sales from people who weren't on my list. Could be an option, but it's like you said, if you don't have time, then none of all that's just talk, And that's the tough part about having multiple products like this, is you do get spread too thin, and even when you have something that you build and you feel like it's been automated, as soon as you hit a bump in the road like this, if you lose Google rankings or your advertising stops working or a VA quits on you or any of these things, suddenly it's not automated and it's like you have to carve out that time to go back and fix those things.
But it's sitting there in the back of my mind. At some point, I have to go do this, and it's a matter of going to do it, because if I do that, then I can actually go to a lot of partners and a lot of the Altiris partners and pitch it to them and say, hey, you could resell this to your customers. And then it's very much product-based as opposed to, subscription where they come in and they may use it for a little while. It'd be much easier to just give it to them as a one-off and not have to worry about that ongoing subscription.
What you could do, if that would probably be fast, is to, have someone build just a landing page and make it kind of maybe a longer form landing page, and then use Gumroad because it's a really simple way to integrate with Stripe, and just give them a zip file. That would probably be the least friction way, and I bet that would be a lot faster than any other method. Because I like that idea of just doing a big bulk payment. I think you'll make more using that method.
So what else is up with you?
Well, I have two other things. I wanted to update folks on Inbox Zero that I've been doing with Gmail and Trello. It has been working quite well. And then, you know, I fell off the wagon 2 days ago as we started getting people using Drip, just a bunch of stuff came up. So right now I have 19 messages in my inbox, and I'm now going to have to go back through and either apply to all of them or get them into Trello. So this is probably my first big hurdle with that. And we'll see if I make it through or if I punt and give up on Inbox Zero for good. And the last thing is, it's an email from a listener. His name is Jerome Samuels. And he says, "Hi, Mike and Rob. I wanted to drop you a line to let you know that I'm almost ready to officially launch my SaaS app. It's at goalreports.com. I could not have gotten this far without all your Startups for the Rest of Us advice. I started listening to your podcast religiously in July of 2012. And in September of 2012, I decided to get going with building my app. I'm a non-technical founder, but a domain expert in soccer coaching. Thanks again for all the advice. I could not have done it without you, Jerome Samuels." So thank you very much for writing in, Jerome.
Yeah, thanks, Jerome. It sounds like we get a lot of feedback from people who are non-technical these days, too.
You know, the audience has grown into that, and I didn't expect that when we first launched it, the podcast, but there's definitely, I mean, if I were to put a number on it, I would say it's 30%. Today, we're talking about the anatomy of a customer development survey. And so this episode is based on a question from Richard Steer. And he says, "Hi, Rob and Mike. Love the show. Thanks for sharing and being transparent. I'm interested in the survey that Rob ran for Drip. Love the marketing segmenting nugget. If you have a link to the survey you ran, that would really help me as I'm struggling with mine. Thanks." And the survey he's asking about, I mentioned, you know, it was probably 4 or 5 episodes ago. So Drip is my email marketing app. We're going to be launching it in the next month or two. We have a landing page at getdrip.com. And at a certain point, I was trying to figure out, were we actually building something that was providing value for the people on our launch list? But I just wanted to confirm it because I was starting to doubt it after talking with a lot of people. And so we had about 1,400 on the launch list at that point, and I sent out a survey. I asked him 6 questions, got a lot of good data out of it. And so I didn't really go through those questions on the update a couple episodes ago, but we're going to take today and kind of dig into what Mike and I think makes a good survey, and then a couple things about what not to ask. And this is all during customer development. We're going to couch it as that. So it's during that time before you've launched a product, when you're still trying to figure out what you should build to solve the problem at hand. We're going to touch on 6, maybe 7 question types that you should ask, and I'm going to try to keep them generic. Obviously, I have the survey sitting here in front of me that I asked about my app, but I'm going to try to make it generic so that it applies to yours. Before we start talking about specific questions, first thing I think you should have at the top of a survey, and you can use, you know, you can easily use WooFoo for something like this, or Gravity Forms if you have a WordPress site. Myself, I love the Google Docs survey. It just puts it into a Google spreadsheet and allows easy manipulation of everything. So that's what I use for this. But the first thing you should have at the top of the survey is a big thank you for those taking the time to give us your thoughts, basically, right? That their answers will really help you, et cetera, et cetera. I use stuff like, you know, "Your feedback totally blows us away, and it, you know, it's going to make this an awesome product," and that kind of stuff. Either way, you just want to make it so that it's heartfelt and it doesn't sound like some stiff automated thing, right? Of like, "Thank you for your survey response." So after that, after you have that big kind of thank you at the top, this is a survey I put together. I haven't tested it, you know, split tested it or anything like that, but I did send it out to my list and I got really good feedback and results. I got a lot of responses, and that's going to depend on your list. So I'm not claiming that this is somehow, you know, the definitive customer development survey, but what I am claiming is that what I learned from doing this and some of the good decisions and bad decisions I made, I think could be carried over to your survey as well. First question that I asked is, what problem do you really hope product name will fix? And I actually said, what email marketing problem do you really hope Drip will fix? And then I gave them 4 or 5 radio buttons. And I asked some very specific questions. It was some high-level issues that I hoped Drip would help them with. And then I gave them another radio button that had a text box so they could fill it in, so I could get some ideas. You want to keep this small. You don't want to have 10 options. And you also want to ask the most pertinent. I mean, you're really asking, what is the number one problem that you want fixed? Now, some people wrote other and then said all of the above, and that's fine. I kind of disregarded those ones because I don't want people who want everything, because I can't build everything on this list. The 3 things I asked about were, do you want more website conversions? Do you want more sales leads? Do you want better email workflow? Or are you just curious about Drip or other? And those options were awesome. Like, it totally broke down who was interested in Drip And it also, you know, 20% of the people said they were just curious, and that really helped me to basically eliminate them from my analysis.
Yeah, and that's really important, is being able to eliminate people as potential customers. And most people think that, oh, I want to get everybody as a customer. But the fact is, you really need to filter out those people who are either just kicking the tires or are going to give you feedback that's going to take you in a wrong direction, because they're not going to pay for it anyway. So you have to be really careful about who you're directing these at. Another thing that I want to point out is that, you know, what Rob's talking about in terms of what he did for the Drip survey was he was asking them, what email marketing problem do you really hope Drip will fix? And this is assuming, and you have to understand that this makes an underlying assumption that they already understand what the product is. If you're putting out a survey to get feedback about an idea of something, you're trying to solicit information from them about what problems they have versus what problem are they hoping to solve. So it's a very subtle difference and distinction between the two. On Rob's side, what he, you know, had this fundamental assumption is he's helping them with an email marketing problem, specifically what kind of email marketing problem do they have. Whereas if you're trying to solicit information about a product you're interested in developing, you want to solicit a little bit more information, and you do one of two things. Either you do approach it the way Rob did, or you let them know up front, here's the problem and here's a solution that I've come up with that I think would solve that problem, and here are my questions to you about that.
That's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. I have specifically already emailed this list with at least two updates about what Drip is, what it's going to do, some of the basic value props, screenshots, that kind of stuff. I'm not saying everyone read them, but I assume there was a certain level of education about what Drip is and what it does. That's right. You should keep that in mind as you're hearing what I've asked in the survey, because there is some education. It was a landing page that has quite a bit of information, and then I've given them information via email. So they are quasi-educated consumer. So the next question that I asked folks is, I said, is there anything else that product name needs in order to be invaluable for you? And with this one, I had four choices, and I asked some about some very specific features that we are considering developing. So the first question was about their pain point, right? What do you want more of? Second one is about some very specific features that I was debating and hearing from people one-on-one requests, but trying to figure out how many people feel this way. So for me, it was option number one was, I love your cool pop-up opt-in form. Number two was split testing of emails and sequences. Number three was analytics and conversion tracking. And number four was other. And of course, I got a lot, you know, in other, but that really told me a lot of people wanted some pretty complex stuff. And again, those folks I had to kind of eliminate from the analysis of this question, because we're not able to build a lot of complex stuff right now.
And the interesting thing about what Rob just said is that, like, he basically asked what the problem was that they were having. And then the second thing was, what features are you interested in? And if you basically do some quick math between those things, you can, you know, just take the option from the first question, option from the second question, and multiply them together, add them up. And you can figure out essentially the largest segment of your audience that is interested in that specific thing. And that's part of why this survey is so helpful, because it allows you to understand what people are most interested in, so that you can concentrate on that first, and then you can move on to the second thing, and then on to the third thing, assuming that those things are all related and that they're going to fit in with the greater feature set of your product. The primary thing that you need to do is figure out what to concentrate on first. And a lot of times you just don't have a gut feel for that. Getting this feedback is just absolutely critical in order for you to prioritize things, because there are so many things on your plate to build the product that you need to figure out what it is that people want the most.
Question number three was, which competitor do you currently use? So I listed out MailChimp, AWeber, Campaign Monitor, Constant Contact, None, and Other. And what was nice is I was looking to figure out how many are we going to need to integrate with, if in fact people don't want to leave their existing competitor. And there was a big cluster on a couple of these. And so, you know, it kind of made it easier for us. I think that asking about what competitor they're using and including None, and sometimes including Excel, and sometimes including pen and paper, I think all of those are competitors to your app. And knowing that is a pretty invaluable lesson.
Another way of asking this type of question is that just leave it open-ended. If you don't give them the options, you just say, what other email marketing apps do you currently use? It will do a little bit of market research for you, because you know that they're probably using something else, and they'll tell you if they are, because they're going to know that off the top of their head. And there are going to be things that they probably tell you that you'd never heard of before. They may not say Constant Contact. They may say, you know, some other email capture program. But if that hasn't come up on your radar,
you might want to take a look and figure out, well, why are they using that? Are there a lot of people who are using this based on, you know, the people who come back from that survey? And it can give us a little bit more insight into, you know, not just what people are using, but why they might be using it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you had mentioned offline that you, in an AudiTrack survey, you had asked what other like server software do you currently pay for, and just put a big open text area there. And I think that could be valuable as well. I think I'm a little further down the line. You had sent that out months ago, but I'm further down the line. I wanted to be more specific. I didn't just want a broad range of things. I was asking this specifically to figure out what to integrate with. But I also think that your question could be really important as you're trying to kind of feel out what it is that people are using.
The specific question I asked was, you know, do you currently use any services for monitoring your web server? If so, which ones and why? And part of that was to understand what other things people are using, but in some ways that gives you price points that they're already comfortable paying. So that was helpful to me because it helped me in figuring out what I should be charging, because if somebody else is already paying for New Relic, for example, New Relic is not a cheap solution, but if they're already paying for it and they are interested in AuditShark and they're looking to fill out the survey and provide me with that information, then chances are that I could probably get away with charging, you know, something along those lines. So it can help you in terms of price points. It can also help you in terms of understanding why it is that they currently pay for those solutions. So then you can integrate that information back into your marketing collateral and say, oh, well, you're interested in New Relic because you want high uptime. AuditShark can help you do that, and here are the reasons that it can do it, and here is how it does it.
The next question I asked, which is question number 4, was, are you planning to continue using your existing product type as long as product name integrates with it? So mine was, are you planning to continue using your existing email marketing app as long as Drip integrates with it? Not everyone needs to ask this question because it's not relevant, but Drip is potentially could be seen as an add-on to something like MailChimp or Constant Contact. And I didn't know how many people planned on staying with their MailChimp account and how many people just wanted to wholesale run away from MailChimp and come to Drip. And my answer is, the first one is, yep, if I can get the benefits of Drip and ensure that every subscriber is also added to my existing list, I'm all for it. And the other answer was, no way, I'm looking to cut bait and run to Drip with arms open wide. And frankly, the vast majority wants to get the benefits of Drip and ensure every subscriber is also added to their existing list. And that was really, obviously, it's really good for me to know, right? It shows that, one, that people probably like their existing providers or just have that confidence in their existing providers. They already know the features and they don't want to go through the headache of moving. But there was a chunk of people who also did want to move. And so that means at some point we're going to have to implement enough features that we can essentially, you know, not replace everything in a MailChimp or a Constant Contact, but we know that we're going to need broadcast emails, as an example, which is something that really Drip doesn't need by itself. But to replace a MailChimp, you have to have something like broadcast emails. So again, this isn't necessarily a question everyone needs to ask, but given what I knew and what I'd been hearing, this is how I was able to clarify that in my mind and actually put some data to the numbers. I should have mentioned this earlier, but I had about 1,400 people on the list when I emailed and I got over 300 responses. And so really good response rate, in my opinion. And as a result, the data, it's pretty clean and it's pretty clear and indicative of, I think, what the majority wanted.
Yeah, I like that you asked this question because it is important to understand whether or not people are looking to just outright switch from some other product or whether they just want some sort of an integration or they're looking at your product as an add-on, not necessarily a replacement for other things that they're already using. Because in some ways, it sets up expectations for you, because if they're expecting to be able to completely move off of, say, MailChimp, for example, then they're going to expect that a lot of the features that are in MailChimp are also going to be in Drip. And when they sign up for it, they're going to be extremely disappointed when that's not the case, because that's not what you were building. You were not building a replacement for MailChimp.
Right. And I bet that on our marketing site, we're going to add that verbiage. We are not a replacement for MailChimp or Constant Contact. We are an add-on. I mean, that's probably how, when we launch, I bet I'll have that verbiage somewhere on there. So the next question that I asked was, how do you spend your days? And the options I gave were running a startup / software company, email marketing, online marketing, and other. And with this one, I was trying to figure out which role chose which of the options above, right? I wanted to figure out which role really wanted the split testing, which role really wanted, you know, more leads versus more website conversions. And this was infinitely helpful because I know where to reach these certain demographics. I have reach into some of them and not others. Actually, the more I dug into the data, there were a lot of folks who would say like other, they'd say, you know, 9 to 5 and I'm looking to launch a startup type thing. And so I was able to even put even more of them into that software / startup company bucket. I definitely think I almost didn't ask this question. I didn't do it till the end. And I think this is one thing I would put on every survey I ask from now on, because it just allows you to see the responses that are really going to matter to you.
Because you need to know who it is that's answering your survey, because if you're just getting these generic answers from people, it can be kind of hard to figure out what sort of role they play in the company that they're responding from. So if they're not the decision maker, for example, then you know their answers are going to make a world of difference than if they're the startup founder and they're the ones who are calling the shots, so they're the ones who are saying what they do and they don't pay for. So you want to give a little bit more credibility to the people who are cutting the checks versus the people who are just doing the marketing or just the essentially carrying out the needs of the company.
So the sixth and final question that I asked was your email. And I put in quotes, if you're interested in early access. This was surprising. 85% of people who filled out the survey put their email in there. Now, I already have their email, right? Because I just emailed them. But what this allowed me to do is now have a full view of what that person with that email actually needed. And so I could go back and say, okay, Drip is going to focus on website conversions first rather than the other options that I named because the vast majority wanted that. Then, you know, we already have, in terms of the features I asked about, we already have a pop-up form and we're going to do split testing. We already have analytics. So I could group those together. We already have a MailChimp integration. So slowly I could just by sorting and copying and pasting, and I could figure out my early bird list. I very well may do a 3-layered launch where right now I'm dealing one-on-one with early access customers. Then I may do a group of this early bird or pre-early bird list, which are the group of people who answered basically all in line with everything we're already doing with Drip and are very much in line with it. And they're going to be the most likely to use Drip, get value out of it, most likely to convert. You know, they answered all the questions with in line with what we're doing with Drip. And so I might just launch to them and get them in and then work on some features for them and then do a final launch to the entire list, which would obviously convert less. You know, that way I'm not trying to manage everyone coming in at once with a bunch of feature requests, because what you're going to do is you're going to get folks in who really want a bunch of complex workflow or, you know, other features that you really don't want to build. And it's hard. There's a lot of noise when that happens. And if I can keep it to kind of my core audience of people who really know what Drip is, what it's about, and know that it provides value for them based on these responses, it'll be an easier time for that first few months building something that really helps these people out.
Yeah, I did the exact same thing when I was putting together the survey for Audishar. When you ask people for their email address, you can take that into account and segment your early access list into several different groups of people. One of the things that people just kind of assume is that an early access is going to be everybody all at once, or you're going to be allowed in along with all the other early access people, but that's not necessarily the case. What you can do is you can have a phased early access, and to separate out the people who are going to be interested in the features that you have available when those features are available. So if they're interested in feature one and you've got that implemented now, you let those people know. And then when you've got feature two, the people have come into your list and, you know, they've gone through that survey and they said, hey, I'm interested in feature two, and that's the most important thing to me. You let them in as kind of a phase two, maybe a month later when you've actually got that feature ready. So you don't just open up the floodgates to your early access list all at once. You phase them in over time, and you do that based on the things that they said that they were interested in.
The seventh question that you may want to consider asking, and that several people wrote me directly and said you should have included, is might want to include an open text field just for more comments and other suggestions. I didn't do it on purpose. I actually didn't want other comments and suggestions. I really wanted these very specific answers to these very specific questions. And that's the point that I'm at. We're focused, we're moving forward, we're building very specific features. So to get a slew of just new feature ideas about email marketing is not necessarily something that I want. Now, I did get some emails with some interesting thoughts and interesting suggestions. Almost none of them were that new, and I still had to parse through them. You know, they're things that we pretty much are already looking at or have already considered. At the same time, there were several people who replied and let me know, hey, you should have included this. So you may want to include it.
as Rob said earlier, I mean, this is not the end-all, be-all of the things that you should ask. You definitely want to ask things that are pertinent to the application that you're building that you're interested in building. I mean, for AuditShark, one of the questions I asked was, what are the two primary concerns you would have about this type of service? And I asked that because I wanted to know what objections people would have to somebody coming in and auditing their servers and pulling security information from their servers. And I was very clear up front in the survey, and I said, this will pipe data from your machine out into the cloud. And I wanted to know if that was going to raise objections. And if so, how would I address those in the marketing material? Because I'm going to have to address them at some point. I'm not going to be talking to everybody up front and explaining to them, you know, in explicit detail with my voice and experience saying, this is what I'll do and this is how I'm going to handle it. Because I need to know that I can convince people from a website that, you know, I'm going to do all of these things and help protect their data.
Very nice. I really like that question, actually. I think that could be very useful for a lot of people. So the last thing I'll note about the survey, well, there's two things, I guess. The last one is, after they took the survey, they get a confirmation page. And Google's default text is, it's kind of lame. It's generic. It says something like, your request has been submitted. And that's not interesting. So add some personality to it a little bit. I said, thanks a million for taking the time to let us know how you'd like to use Drip. We'll be in touch as launch approaches. So it's nothing fancy, but at least it lets them know that, you know, that you're really going to listen to them. And I think the other thing I wanted to say is, with every email I've sent to this list, including the survey one, I'm receiving 20 or 30 replies and a lot of people asking to be on the early access list. And that's, to me, a good sign. I think that if you're sending these out and no one's responding, that either your list is not primed, your list is not the right target audience, or you're just doing something a little off with your marketing. So keep that in mind as you move forward and maybe make adjustments if folks aren't responding to it.
So we've talked about the things that you should be doing and should be asking. What are some of the things that they should not ask?
The first thing I think of to never ask is, here's this list of features we have in mind. Go ahead and rank them. You know, or here's a list of features we have in mind. Rate them all on a 1 to 10 basis. That's asking a lot of people. You're going to get so many fewer responses if you ask a question like that.
I think the other problem with that sort of question is that you're asking them to rank all of these things, and they may put something at the bottom because it's completely irrelevant to them. It has nothing to do with how important it is. It's completely immaterial to them. But a lot of the software that you use for these types of things, it kind of forces them to say, to pick and choose each of those things. So you have to be really careful about that.
I think a corollary to this one is, don't ask anything that takes more than a checkbox or a quick note.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too, because there are some things that they're going to know off the top of their head, so it's okay to ask some open-ended questions where they're going to have something to say about it, or, you know, they're going to list off a couple of products that they currently use. But it's very, very different to ask them, you know, start asking opinions. And if you can really focus what your question is and focus it in on yes, no, and start validating the assumptions that you have, that's what you're really interested in. And that's why you run these surveys, is to start validating your assumptions. And if you start making things too open-ended, it's really hard to do that because then you have to start sifting through the data, and it's not always clear-cut whether or not somebody means X or Y when they start, you know, expounding upon their ideas.
Yeah, that's a good point. The broader your questions are, the more time it takes and the less accuracy you have in these surveys. And so all my questions are pretty specific because I had one-on-one conversations with at least 30 people, whether it was conversations via email, some were via Skype, and some were at MicroConf. And I had all these ideas and thoughts and different feature ideas and value propositions, and I was trying to nail down, of those, which specifically does my launch list want the most? And that's why I was able to be so specific. So open-ended questions, while they can be dangerous, it is totally, I think, reasonable to put an open text box and not require it at the bottom, like we said, right? To have kind of that comment thing, so if you can give people can give other thoughts. But to make that kind of your main part of your survey that you're grabbing data from, you don't know enough about your product if you're asking a question like that. The next thing, what not to ask, is you shouldn't be asking about you or your product. You should be asking about their preferences. And so a question like, tell me what competitors you see for this product. You're asking people to think hard, potentially do some research. I'm not a fan of that question. What I'd prefer is, tell me what competitors you are using. It's a really easy question to answer. Or, you know, what have you used in the past? Something like that. It's so fast. It allows people to not have to, you know, feel burdened, like they have to really rack their brain for these answers.
The last thing you need to keep in mind about what not to ask is don't ask about features you're not planning to build for months or years. And a corollary to that is don't ask about things that you don't immediately need to know. Because if you're not going to act on that information in the very near future, then essentially it's irrelevant. You're asking them something for the sake of asking them, not because you're going to use the data. You really want to ask them things that are going to be relevant to you and that you can act on.
So to recap, 6 questions you probably want to ask in a customer development survey are: number 1, what problem do you really hope product name will fix? Number 2, anything else product name needs in order for it to be invaluable for you? Number 3, which competitor do you currently use? Number 4, are you planning to continue using your existing product type as long as product name integrates with it? Number 5, how do you spend your days? Number 6, your email, if you're interested in early access. And number 7 is a maybe, and that's an open text field for more comments. And if you have comments for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.